Brad Nelson, how you doing?
Doing good, Kirk. You called.
I did. Do you know what happens sometimes on the base of Mount Manitoba?
Well, the only thing I know about Manitoba is it's flat and it's cold.
Well, it's really cold, but so you know what I've got from the fine people here at Okuba? Take a look at this.
Oh, what is that?
That is a rechargeable hand warmer. Makes a
Ooh.
great Christmas gift. And you can check them out on okuba.com. And let me tell you about this little gizmo here. It's the
Okay.
industry-leading brand of rechargeable hand warmers over the last few years, founded in 2017. They've provided great options for people who are going outside or even inside if you want. Maybe you got some like maybe getting a little cold inside, you know? Some people, when they're older, you kind of need something to hold on to. For me, it's great because I've got a little dog who needs to go outside all the time, and she hasn't figured out how to do her business. So sometimes it's really good for me to just sort of like hold on to that. Also, too, I'm going to go ice fishing this winter. I'm going to bring this. So I'm going to have one hand here, one hand on my beard, one hand on the pole.
So you can recharge that
Yes, I can
with your
recharge
three
that
hands.
with my three hands. I mean,
Yeah.
yes.
So you can recharge it. So you're not worried about any waste or anything like that.
No.
Because the regular little crushable hand warmers, you find a place to turf them once they're dead.
Yeah, so this, yeah, exactly. So this is like the newest state-of-the-art one. So every time they're always trying to innovate, much like ourselves, we're always innovating as we do on notinhallofame.com. So
Truly
it is
that.
something, yeah, that's very unique and it makes a great Christmas gift. And guess what? You can buy that for the Black Friday promo, but you got to do that pretty quick because it's ending on November 28th.
Okay, so where do I go to get it?
Okuba, OCOOPA.com. And there's a promo code.
Nice. Okay, hit me with the
25%.
promo code.
Oh
I'm
yeah,
going to write this
25%
down.
off. Kirk 25. It's easy to remember because I'm Kirk,
25.
and 25 is half my age.
Nice. Nice and easy to remember.
Yeah, but it's also the percentage that you get. So I think it's something that would make a great Christmas gift. I think I might give that to Andrea. What do you think?
She could use it walking the dog for sure.
She could use that walking the dog. You don't have a
Yeah.
dog, but I mean,
I
like,
don't have a dog,
you don't
but I
have like.
have cold hands sometimes, so I'm
Yes.
gonna use your promo code.
Absolutely. You can do that, Kirk 25. And yes, check this out. I'm really proud of this cool product. I didn't make it, but I kind of wish I did. I kind of wish I came up with this idea. It'd be a great
No
idea,
doubt.
right?
It's a good
Yes.
idea.
Absolutely. So thank you so much and check that out, everyone. Hurry, buy it now.
I'm looking forward to getting mine.
Welcome to a special episode of the Buck Stops here on notinhallofame.com. And I don't use this word loosely, but I've got a true football historian. Ken Crippen, thank you so much for being part of the show. Ken, first off, before we begin, thank you so much for being part of the special group that we had that was our mock football, Pro Football Hall of Fame committee. And again, I've mentioned this before we went live. A few of my other people, when they saw that you were going to be part of that, they just went, So thank you so much for
Thank
being
you.
part of
I
that.
well, thank you. I appreciate being invited, and I definitely had a good time participating.
So Ken, before we sort of like go into what you're doing now, I just want to get into like how you became a fan of pro football. Like, what was like the first sort of like big moment for you, I guess as a kid when you were thinking like, this is a sport that I want to follow.
I mean, my parents, grandparents, uncle. All Buffalo Bills fans. I'm originally from Buffalo.
Okay.
So, it's kind of in the family. So even when I moved away, moved down to Philadelphia, the Buffalo blood was still in me. So I was always a Buffalo Bills fan. Dad was always watching football on Sundays, talking about football with my grandfather. My uncle was in sports broadcasting, so talking about football with him. So that's always been there. And then, as I got older, I started diving more into the history of the game. And the more I dug into it, the more I really enjoyed it. And I just wanted to keep going farther and farther back, learning more and more. So that's really where it started.
I didn't know you're a Bills fan. Are you still a Bills fan? So, like, when you're watching today, like, is Buffalo, because I guess, sort of, as a historian and trying to keep everything sort of neutral, do you still cheer for Buffalo or is it kind of even at this point for you?
I mean, I definitely root for Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I usually don't advertise it as much. I mean, I've started advertising it a little bit, but usually I try to stay neutral, especially when I was running the Professional Football Researchers Association. I didn't want to show any bias in any way. I wanted to show entire history of the league as well as other leagues. So I didn't really advertise my fandom, but you know, on Sundays, I'm rooting for the Buffalo Bills.
All right, so let's talk about that first before we get into what you're doing now. How did that come about, the Research Association? Because that's where I think a lot of people, when they see your name, that's where they know you from, initially.
I joined them back in late 80s, early 90s. So I've been with them for a long time. In 2006, I became the assistant executive director of the association, working with Bob Carroll. And then when Bob Carroll passed away, I was elevated up to executive director, taking over for him. Then I stepped down from executive director and ran for president, and then have been president for a while until last December. At that point, I decided to retire from the PFRA as far as a leadership position in order to focus on the Football Learning Academy, which I know we'll be talking about.
Yeah, so let's talk about that now. So for everyone who's watching and listening, the Football Learning Academy is something that I got really excited about learning that you're doing. And I can't wait till when you do a deep dive into the AAFC. So I'm looking forward to when that happens. So tell everyone what the Pro Football Learning Academy is.
The Football Learning Academy is an online school teaching pro football history. And we essentially have two missions. One is we want people to be able to take today's game and put it into historical context. But we also want to raise money for retired players. I've been interviewing retired players for a long time now, and you hear all the stories of all the medical problems that they have, struggling to pay medical bills, things like that. So I wanted to be able to use this platform in order to be able to raise money to be able to help those retired players in need.
What is sort of like one of the, when as a researcher and as a historian, what is one of the coolest things that you sort of learned that a lot of people may not be aware of in terms of like just the history of football?
I mean, there's so much.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
No, that's fine. I know when I was digging into football history, one thing that really interested me is the All-America Football Conference, which you had mentioned. Also pre-NFL stuff, but you know, really those war years were very interesting as far as what was going on with the NFL, what was going on with the All-America Football Conference, that there were six leagues that were trying to run simultaneously in those war years.
Oh, I didn't know that. But there were six?
There were six. Not all of them survived. There was the original United States Football League. Red Grange was a part of that. They never got off the ground. So
Herschel Walker might think that he's still part of that. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. But there were multiple leagues. None of them survived outside of the All-America Football Conference and obviously the NFL. But there was a lot going on at that time. And then you had the quote unquote merger between the two leagues in 1950. So to me, that was the fascinating time. And when you think about it, you brought in the Cleveland Browns, you brought in the San Francisco 49ers, both teams that are still here. Mm-hmm. And you had the Baltimore Colts. They were not the same Baltimore Colts that came on a few years later, which are now the Indianapolis Colts. Some people get that confused, but seeing that transition from the Colts over to the Texans, over to the Baltimore Colts, there was a lot of stuff going on at that time. And to me, it was definitely fascinating. But yeah, I would say those additional leagues that tried to compete against the NFL during the war years when players were scarce because they were all deployed overseas.
I haven't had the opportunity to talk to as many past football players that you have. One of my favorite interviews that I had the pleasure of doing was with Jerry Kramer a few years ago. Is there any like former player that you had the chance to talk to that was just like something that just really stuck with you that you'll never forget? And obviously you've talked to so many. So I'm sort of putting you a bit on the spot. Like, is there one in particular that I can't believe that I got a chance to talk to that person.
Honestly, there's a lot of them. Ones that really stuck with me, I think, were more of, you really saw the health issues that they were facing. Obviously, I'm not going to mention names, but there was one player who was in such bad condition that you could barely understand him. Others, you saw varying degrees of dementia and Alzheimer's.
Right.
One interview, basically, I was going through his daughter, and she said that he has good days, he has bad days. When I call you, that is when he has a good day, and you better do the interview right then and there.
Yeah.
So those types of things really stick with me. I mean, yeah, there's definitely personality things, like, you know, you hear Bill Parcells, you thought that, you know, he's going to be an incredibly difficult interview. He's probably one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Incredibly fun to interview. Oh, great time. Okay. Art Donovan. I mean, we've seen him on late night TV.
On Letterman. Oh, yeah, he was amazing. Yes.
He's the same in person. Yeah, exactly the same. And at the end of it, he's like, yeah, come down to Baltimore. Yeah, we'll have a beer together. It was great. He says, yeah, just go get Acacia Schlitz and come over and we'll have fun. And, you know, when you go Schlitz to the beer store and you get Schlitz, they'll say, you must be meeting with Donovan.
Well, up in Canada, we drink, sorry, real beer, but anyway.
I don't consider Schlitz real bar beer, but yeah, I may get in trouble for that. But that was Art's favorite.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I'll admit, there have been times where I just need like a find my Pabst Blue Ribbon, and that's okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
Works for me.
Yep.
So in terms of the, I guess, sort of the charitable endeavors, the NFL, as much as it is, I would like to think right now, like when I was a kid, I guess growing up in the 80s, I didn't feel that the National Football League was the biggest pro sports organization, rather. I thought MLB was. I think right now the NFL is.
Right.
Saying that, the way that they've taken care of their own is a bit lacking. So let's go. I want to go into like how you sort of like are trying to give back to that, which is great, but at the same time, sad that I guess you have to feel that the NFL hasn't.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely more that can be done. I know in the last CBA, they've made some great strides, especially when it comes to the pre-1993 players. But there's still a lot more work that needs to be done, and there's still a lot of players out there that need help. So that's why, you know, I'm taking a portion of all the proceeds from each of the classes that are paid classes and giving that to retired players in need. So more needs to be done. Hopefully more will be done in the next CBA that comes up. But, you know, I definitely was happy to see that they started addressing some of the pre-1993 players and the issues that they're facing with the latest CBA.
And so let's talk about some of the classes that you're doing.
Okay. Well, one, we have a master class with legendary sports writer and broadcaster Leslie Visser. So she comes in not only talking about her career and everything that she faced, but also giving some interviewing techniques. So talking about what makes her a great interviewer. So, I mean, it's definitely fascinating to listen to somebody who's a master at her craft talk about it and give tips on how you can improve things, especially, you know, you've got a lot of people that are doing podcasts, they want to get into broadcasting, things like that. So these types of things are definitely going to be beneficial just to, you know, help you with the stuff that you're working on. But, you know, learning about her fascinating career too. I mean, it's just, she was incredible. So that's one that we have. We also have a class on the first Black quarterbacks. The history is not exactly correct when it comes to giving credit to the first Black quarterbacks. So we wanted to do a deep dive into that and find out what is the true history so we can have the proper lineage out there and give people credit for their accomplishments. In that class, we've got two interviews, one with Lloyd Vance, who's one of the leading authorities from ESPN on that subject. And then we also have Marlon Briscoe, the first starting Black quarterback in the American Football League. So we have an hour interview with him. He was very open and honest about some of the troubles that he faced. So that was definitely a fascinating interview. And then we've got lots of other interviews and also topics on various aspects of pro football history, going back to the very beginning, talking about the first forward pass in pro football history, talking about the first players, professional players of football, even going back beyond that, you know, talking about earlier players. So there's lots of stuff in there, lots of different types of topics, lots of interviews. We're going to be doing even more interviews. So there's something there for everyone. So definitely hope that people check it out and they enjoy it.
But it's not just interviews. I mean, there's going to be some like other classes that you're doing and other history lessons.
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there are a lot of interviews there, but yeah, there are classes there and we're going to be continually adding more classes. Some of the ones that are in the works, you had mentioned earlier about the All-America Football Conference.
Yeah, I'm pumped for that one.
We'll have an in-depth look at that. I mean, I've obviously written two books on the subject, so I know a little bit about the All-America Football Conference.
I didn't know that. Where can everyone get those books and what are they titled?
You have the original Buffalo Bills. So I focus on the 4 years that the Buffalo Bills were in the All-America Football Conference.
Yeah.
And then there's also an encyclopedia on the entire All-America Football Conference, including stats, all-time roster. We pick an all-time team for that. So you can look at each individual year doing an all-pro type of listing, as well as taking the entire conference, all 4 years, and coming up with the best players and then doing scouting reports on all those players. So we can not just put out stats and awards, but actually the film study that we did on all of these players, putting what we've seen on film in this book. So there's a lot of information on the All-America Football Conference in there. So anybody who's interested in that conference and that other league,
yeah,
definitely something that they would be interested in.
Okay. So I guess I'm doing sort of like a deep cut here. How do you find the footage for this?
There's varying sources on that. I can't reveal all of my sources, but
fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely film out there. I've watched a lot of film. I've watched probably all of the film that's out there on the All-America Football Conference.
Oh, wow.
So we do deep dives into those players, and I've done historical scouting reports for not just All-America Football Conference, but, mm-hmm, other people, you know, Laverne Dilwig and Al Wistard and Jerry Kramer, Bob Skoronski. There's a bunch of them out there. So that's the stuff that I have on my website right now.
Okay.
You'll be able to take a look at that and see what we've done from film study for these players. And the goal was to help out the Pro Football Hall of Fame selection committee, because not all of them are watching the film. So I'm watching it for them and telling them what we're seeing, so that hopefully it's going to help them make an educated decision as far as who should be in the Hall of Fame and maybe who should wait a little longer.
I've been kind of like minorly obsessed with Paul Brown lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess just going back to the AFC, just and you would know this far better than I, just from what little I've read about him. And I'm wondering, is he in a way a precursor to sort of a modern way of thinking of where you're, I don't care what you look like, but everything that's on the front of your uniform is all I care about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't care about your skin color.
I got schooled with Randall Cunningham by you, so like I didn't want to do that again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he didn't care what skin color you were.
Yeah.
He wanted to know that you could play football, because he was all about putting the best team on the field, mm-hmm, and that's going to be the best players that you can find. And so, signing Bill Willis and Marion Motley was, mm-hmm, not a problem for him, because he had them on his teams prior. He knew that they could play football. So there was no doubt that they would work well on the Cleveland Browns. And so he didn't hesitate in signing them.
And I guess too, like, just like, that's something that still blows my mind. I mean, like, and I feel like I'm relatively old at 50, but I've never in my life ever not seen African-Americans dominate football.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that sort of, there was a time when, actually, well, in my lifetime, there was a time when they said, well, you can dominate football, but not a quarterback. Mm-hmm. So like that in itself is still so bizarre to me.
Yeah. And you still have the biases out there of this is a cerebral quarterback versus this is an athletic quarterback. And it usually breaks down along racial barriers. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to get rid of those stereotypes, get rid of looking at the color of people's skin and just looking at their abilities and judging them based on their abilities.
Yeah, and sometimes it cuts both ways. I was talking to one good friend of mine who's African-American, like one of my best friends growing up. And so like we said, like, did we ever think that growing up that we would say like, you know, we could win with a black quarterback and a white running back, like thinking of Christian McCaffrey?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah. And it's amazing that, you know, we still have those conversations these days, but right. Unfortunately we do. And there's, like I said, still a lot of work that needs to be done.
What is going to be something that, like, what else are we working on the Pro Football Learning Academy that you're really excited to talk about?
Couple of flagship classes that we're going to put together. So one is strictly football related, where it's going to go from the very beginnings of football up to probably the end of the 1969 season. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a full length course, something that's going to be similar to what would be taught at a college or a university. So, you know, you're looking at 10, 15 hours worth of lectures on that with quizzes and stuff like that. So you have that flagship class. Also working on another flagship class on leadership lessons that you can learn from football that apply to the corporate world. Because, yeah, you can see everything in coaching and on the players and stuff, but there's still the front office side that needs to be taken care of. And learning things like change management, learning about having the proper culture. When I was talking with Ron Wolf, he specifically mentioned that when he got to Green Bay, he had to change the culture in there because it wasn't a winning culture. They didn't have a winning mindset in the front office. And so, yeah, you can change things, you know, in the locker room and on the football field, but if you don't change it in the front office, you're still going to struggle being able to be successful because you need all of that working in order to be able to have a successful football team. And so I want to be able to take a look at that and the crossovers between the football front office as well as the corporate America and how they work together and the lessons that you learned that apply through both of them.
And there's also too, I was just on the site recently. So you've got some material up with Don Shula.
Correct. Yeah. We just put out an archival interview with Don Shula. It's one that I did back in, I think it was 2010. It was right after his 80th birthday. So just put that out there. And we've got a lot of other archival interviews.
And Amy Trask.
Amy Trask, we just did an Amy Trask interview. We also had Nolan Harrison, who's the senior director over at the NFLPA, the Players Union. So there's a lot of recent interviews, plus there's the archival stuff like Don Shula, and there's plenty of others that are going to be coming out. We've got Mercury Morris, we've got Ken Riley, we've got Gino Marchetti. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of them that, you know, we're planning on releasing over the coming months.
Yeah, so I think it's definitely a sort of a must for everyone who's into not just modern football, but the history of football and how we got where we are and how we're progressing. And where do you see pro football going? As someone who's sort of like watched everything that's happened in the last little while and dug deeper into the years before you were born, where do you think it might go? Like, I'll admit myself, I was worried, I think a lot when the concussion issues were happening, I thought, man, there might be some trouble, but football's never going away. Mm-hmm. They're trying to be safer. They're trying to evolve to a more safer sport, but where are we going from here? Like in the last 20 years, we've seen certainly the boom of the offensive quarterback because of what they're allowed to do. But where do you see that going 20 years from now? Like what do you forecast, if anything?
I think it's still going to keep going in the same direction where they're going to favor the offense over the defense. So you're going to see more scoring. You're going to see more rules put in place to hamper the defense. So yeah, you're going to see records just getting shattered as far as passing yards, receptions, touchdowns, mm-hmm. scoring per game, total scoring, all that kind of stuff. I see that definitely exploding over the next several years, 10 years, 20 years. At some point, they're going to have to rein it back in again and allow the defense to play defense. So hopefully we'll see that swing sooner rather than later. But to me, they definitely want to keep going with the scoring because that's mm-hmm. what creates the excitement and that's what brings people in.
And I think that's something that we have to really understand in terms of era. So like when we look at quarterbacks, for example, we see people in the top 10 in passing statistics who don't really feel like they're top 10 players of all time. Mm-hmm. Players like, I'll just use one, for example, someone who I like a lot, Philip Rivers. Like him a lot. But when I put his stats towards other people, then he might shatter others. But there's always going to, you always have to remember eras. Hockey's like, obviously as a Canadian, I'm pretty big on that in terms of like where 1,000 points in a career means a lot more now than it used to, mm-hmm. you know, sort of went the other way in terms of that. So as a historian, how often do you have that conversation sometimes with people when they'll throw a stat like that to you? Mm-hmm. Like a lot?
Yeah, you hear it a lot because, you know, obviously the stats are getting higher and higher and, you know, we've got more games. We're up to 17 games now. And so right. when you're comparing to a 14-game, 12-game season, obviously it's going to look different. I always say stats without context are meaningless.
Right.
So if you only look at one stat, then you're not really putting everything into context. I mean, I, you know, just take, for example, the Ken Riley argument, 65 mm-hmm. interceptions. That's the beginning, end, and totality of his Hall of Fame qualifications in most people's opinion. And some people say that, you know, he wasn't even the best cornerback on his team. That was Lamar Parrish, and he should right. be getting consideration over Ken Riley.
Okay, well, so look what's your take on that?
I don't think Ken Riley is someone that should be put in, at least not now. I think that there are plenty of other people that are far more deserving. I mean, when you look at it, you've got Ken Riley and you've got Joe Klecko. So now the bar for a Hall of Famer is being all pro once in your career. Joe Klecko had it twice. Ken Riley had it once. That is now your bar for what is a Hall of Famer. And you're basing it all off of one stat. A guy played 16 years in the league. So is it an accumulation? He averaged 4.3 interceptions a year. Is that a Hall of Famer when you take a look at it? And that's something that needs to be considered when he's being brought up in front of the full committee. I mean, you take one stat, you can make anybody look like a Hall of Famer. I always bring out Vinny Testaverde had more passing yards than Joe Montana, who's the Hall of Famer. You have to put everything into context. You have to take a look at an entire career and look beyond just the stats to see who truly belongs in the Hall of Fame. So
do you have somebody who, because you were in our group where we looked at, where we had our mock committee, and I'm really proud of what we did. It's our third year doing that. And again, thank you so much for being a part of it. There was a lot of us, we were fanboying. You were a part of that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. But do you personally have someone who you want to champion? For me, I'm a big person on Henry Ellard. Mm-hmm. So that's somebody who I've been, as I'm sort of doing more and more of a deep dive on that. One person in our group, Tom Saul, he's big on Tom Nalen. Mm-hmm. And you were there for his very passionate speech about that. And he's mm-hmm. really changed a lot of our minds for that. But is there somebody who you're thinking that, how are they not seeing this individual?
Yeah, I'm going to go back on this because there's somebody that has been overlooked for so long. So he is not in the modern pool. He is a senior pool and he is deep in the senior pool. I know that name's come up in your group before. It's Laverne Dilwig.
Yes.
He is somebody that absolutely belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You take a look at it, 6-time consecutive consensus All Pro, 4-time consecutive unanimous All Pro. You take a look at the other pre-modern era ends in there, Bill Hewitt, Wayne Milner, Red Bagrow, combined, they had 5 consensus All Pros. Dillwig had 6. He was better in the 1920s as far as All Pros than Guy Chamberlain and George Halas. Combined, they had 3 consensus All Pros. Dillwig, if you just look at the 20s, had 4. He was obviously the best. Even when you look at stats, even incomplete stats, he blows away the other pre-modern era ends in there, except for Don Hutson. Try to think of a defensive end with 27 interceptions. Somebody who lined up as a defensive end, a 7 technique or a 9 technique with 27 interceptions. Mm-hmm. You look at Wayne Milner, Red Bagrow, and Bill Hewitt. Combined, they had 2 playing the same position.
So why do you think that he got forgotten? Because he played for Green Bay. So this is not a team where you get forgotten.
He was followed by Don Hutson.
Okay.
You remember the guy before Jerry Rice?
Fair enough, because when you just said that, I went, duh. I don't know who was the big. Who was that?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But yeah, I mean, I've watched film on Dillwig, and he was unbelievably quick, and that explains why he has 27 interceptions, because he could run toe-to-toe with the running back coming out of the backfield. He was so quick, he'd get in the backfield before people even knew it. So he's tackling people behind the line of scrimmage. He's running out in pass coverage and covering the running back and getting 27 interceptions. The only other pre-modern era end that beat him was Hutson, but he played defensive back. He didn't play defensive end.
So that's
you're going to have more opportunities. What's that?
So safe to say that is your most wanted person who's not in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you look at his stats, incomplete stats, he blows away the other pre-modern era ends except for Hutson. Okay. So if you completed the stats, then yeah, he'd be even farther ahead.
Okay. So same question for contributor.
Mm-hmm.
Who would that be?
Probably Clark Shaughnessy.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you've got the guy that he didn't invent the T formation, but he took it to a new level.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're contributing something like that, where you're fundamentally changing football, it was all single wing prior to that.
Yeah.
So you're changing it to the T formation. That is the definition of a contributor. So to me, he absolutely belongs in there. I mean, Corey Ells, I know he's up right now. Hopefully he'll get in. But the ones that are not currently the finalists, to me, Shaughnessy belongs in.
I wouldn't be doing sort of like my role here if I didn't sort of promote that our mutual friend, Vinny Las Minuso, I give him a forum where that was his last person that he promoted was Clark Shaughnessy on Vinny Makes the Hall of Fame Case For.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To be fair, I've also said that Vinny will make the Hall of Fame Case For a circle.
He pretty much wants everyone inducted.
Yeah. But Vinny, we love you.
Yep. We love the enthusiasm, Vinny.
For sure. I wouldn't give him his own show on this if I didn't believe that. So I guess just in closing, where can everyone follow you on social media?
All right, Twitter, Football Learn One is our handle there. We're also on Facebook. We have a private Facebook group, but you can apply to join to it. We're on Instagram. We're on LinkedIn. You can go to.
I'll have to do that on Facebook because I'll have to apply for that.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll let you in.
I hope so.
Yeah. And we also have a YouTube channel. So, if you go to www.football-learning-academy.com, we've got links to all of our social media. So, we make it nice and easy for you to find us on all those different platforms and check out all the classes that we have there, too. There's lots of free stuff there, there's some paid stuff. Like I said, all the paid stuff goes to helping retired players in need. So help us raise money to help those people that you love watching on TV on Sundays.
I think we can all get behind that. Ken, thank you so much. You really classed up the joint.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So wherever you are, wherever you may be, stay safe, everybody. Thanks so much.
You have anything to say on that, Rumble?
Yeah, not as much as I thought. I thought it would. I was trying to, like, because I knew this he would come up. I watched him a few times fight. I don't have anything spectacular to say. I wish I did.
Okay. I don't do MMA at all, so.
Yeah.
But he was only 38. Passed away from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So, yeah.
Yeah, not somebody who's going to be in the MMA or UFC Hall of Fame, but somebody who we all remember for watching that sport.
Correct.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Correct. A couple other people I missed, by the way, back to football. Adrian Dingle, defensive end for the Chargers from 99 to 05, passed away at the age of 45. Also passing away, a name for baseball, passed away at the age of 55. Do you remember Chuck Carr? Led the NL in stolen bases in 93.
I'm sorry, Chuck Carr?
Carr, C-A-R-R. Center fielder, played for the Mets, Cardinals, Marlins, Brewers, and Astros.
I don't remember him at all. So what, he stolen base title?
Yeah, he won the stolen base title in 1993.
No, I don't remember that name at all.
Oh, okay. He was a center fielder. He passed away at the age of 55.
Who do you play for?
I don't have it in front of me. From the world of golf, Dow Finsterwald passed away at the age of 93. Won 13 times on the senior and PGA Tour, including the 1958 PGA Championship. Was the PGA Player of the Year in 58. He was 93 years old. Where'd that one go? Coy Gibbs passed away. Race car driver, son of Joe Gibbs. Passed away at only the age of 49. I believe he had a heart attack in his house. But a very big member of the Joe Gibbs racing team. Member of the 1984 U.S. National Olympic hockey team, Stephen Griffith, passed away at the age of 61. A member of the 1966 champion Boston Celtics, Ron Watts, passed away at the age of 79. And a couple people from broadcasting passed away. Jane Gross passed away, the first woman ever to have entered a professional basketball locker room as a reporter. She passed away at the age of 75. In February of 75, when she was a reporter for Newsday, Red Holtzman allowed her to come into the locker room, making her the first one ever. And Fred Hickman passed away as well, the ESPN anchor. Also, at one point, the voice of the Yes Network, passed away at only the age of 66, probably best known for his work on CNN Sports Tonight. He and Oh, why can't I think of his name? The other guy who was with him, who passed away a few years ago, Nick Charles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, of course, oh, I did forget the Beige Mistress took a professional Hungarian tennis player, Ava Szabo, at the age of 77. And then out of the world at large, Robert Clary, best known for his role as Corporal Louis LeBeau on Hogan's Heroes, passed away. Oh. Yes, I figured you'd remember him. He passed away at the age of 96.
Okay. Do you know that my brother and I were not allowed to watch that show?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, because my father being a German.
Because you knew nothing.
Seriously. Yeah, no, we were not allowed to watch that show because my dad said, who was a German? He says, like, no German is this stupid. You're not watching this show.
Interesting.
I'm dead serious. I'm not even fucking with you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I just have a few more so we can move on. John Aniston, Jennifer Aniston's father, best mm-hmm. known as a actor on Days of Our Lives, passed away at the age of 89.
Yes. Oh, yeah. He was a big star to me. Yes.
He was. Mehran Karimi Nasseri, best known as the guy who Tom Hanks played in The Terminal, the guy who got stuck living in the airport, Charles de Gaulle Airport.
Mm-hmm.
The actual man passed away at the age of 76 or 77. Mm-hmm. We're not sure which. Leslie Phillips, best known as the Sorting Hat from the Harry Potter series, passed away at the age of 98. Kevin Conroy, best known as the voice of Batman and all the comics.
Yes. Yeah, that hit Twitter pretty hard, I saw.
It did. Yeah, yeah. He passed away at the age of 66.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, everybody in the whole community, Tara Strong and Steve Bloom, and of course, his partner in crime more than anyone, Mark Hamill, were very, very upset about this. There was actually a time, I'm trying to remember which show it was, but there was a time in the 90s where he was going to be getting the lead on a TV show, and then they found out he was gay and they refused to run the show.
The actor?
Yeah, Kevin Conroy. He was going to get like a live acting spot, and they found out he was gay and refused to run it. I can't remember the name of the show. But he passed away.
Who gives a shit now?
It was 1989. So he passed away at the age of 66. And of course, the last person I have to bring him up, Gallagher. Leo Anthony Gallagher smashed his last watermelon at the age of, again, 76. So there you go.
Yeah, well, he sucks. Sorry.
There was an interesting time in pop culture in the United States. So.
Okay. North of the border, we didn't get it either.
Yeah. So anyway. All right. So that's what I'm finally through 2 weeks. We just had so many people from music who passed away this week. So.
Okay. So we have. Well, usually I do my elevator up, elevator down. I'm not going to do that. Let's just have some fun.
Oh, good. Fun is good. After that long death list, I'm up for fun.
Here's who's dead. We're going to do a bet.
Ooh, okay. I can do bets.
Yeah. Okay. What am I down? -3?
I think you're down to -3. Yeah.
Okay. So, Canada, USA, out of that, for the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, let's do our bets.
So, are we going to draft teams here?
Yes, we are.
All right. So, let's just start then with, let's go group by group. So, each of us get two from each group.
We're going to do by group? Okay.
Do you want to do it? Let's just do it that way. It's easiest.
Sure. Okay.
So out of group B, I'm taking United States. So let's just start with there.
Fuck, I have it. Okay, let me bring up my whole groups here.
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
Well, that's what I thought we were doing.
I didn't know that's what we're doing.
All right, take your time. Jeez. So the World Cup will
be well underway by the time we get our next one. So
screw it. Okay, I can't bring it up. I'll trust you.
All right. So I have Canada, United States. So let's start in group. We'll start in Group A. I'll give you the choice here: Qatar, Ecuador, Senegal, the Netherlands.
So I get first choice, and you get. Netherlands, always, eh?
They are not that good right now, so.
Out of this group, I feel pretty good.
I will take Senegal. Okay. And then I will do, we'll do back and forth. I'll also take Ecuador, and you can have Qatar.
You can have Qatar. That's a really bad, like a movie title.
So group two, I have to take the United States. So I'm presuming you're taking England and Wales, or are you taking Iran?
All right, so I have the next two. So it would be England, obviously. England and Wales.
England and Wales. I will get.
So you got Iran.
I'll get best buddies, United States and Iran. All right, Group C.
Best buddies, you're awesome. Okay.
Group C. Oh, I feel bad about this. I'd like the first pick in this group. Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and Poland.
You're first.
You want me to take first?
Yeah, isn't that what we decided here at this point?
Sure, I'll take Argentina then.
Mm-hmm.
You want Mexico and Poland, or do you want
the other one?
Or Saudi Arabia? It's
Mexico and Poland.
So Mexico, Poland, and I'll take Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you pick first this group. France, Australia, Denmark, and Tunisia.
France. I'm from France.
I'll take Denmark and Australia's not been playing well at all.
I am from France.
I'll take Australia, though. You have Tunisia.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're picking group.
Hold on, where's Canada? Canada's at group F, so I'll start group E. So this is interesting because it's Spain, Costa Rica, Germany, and Japan.
So this is a tough, tough group.
I can't not have the Germans.
You can't what?
I can't not have the Germans.
Well, that's okay. I'll take Spain, so you can have Germany.
I'm the Germans.
Yes. And then do you want Japan or Costa Rica?
Don't care. I just need the Germans.
Just pick one. It's your turn.
Japan. Pick Japan.
This group, you're taking Canada for your first one. So I'll go second. Mm. I'll take Belgium. I'll actually take Morocco. You can have Croatia.
Fair.
All right. Group G. So you get choice here: Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, or Cameroon.
Okay, Brazil.
I'll take Switzerland and Cameroon.
Okay.
You can have Serbia. At one of these things, the African teams are going to take off, and then we have Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, and South Korea. Portugal's looked really good today against Nigeria. I guess I'll take Portugal.
Nigeria, what's the other one?
Oh, so it was Ghana, Uruguay, and South Korea. Ghana, Uruguay, South Korea.
Ghana, South Korea.
Ghana, South Korea. Oh, good, because I was actually thinking about taking Uruguay as my other pick. All right, cool. So that's it. So you have
the Netherlands, Qatar, England, Wales, Mexico, Poland, France, Tunisia, Germany, Japan, Canada, Croatia, Brazil, Serbia, Ghana, South Korea. I have Senegal, Ecuador, United States, Iran, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Denmark, Australia, Spain, Costa Rica, Belgium, Morocco, Switzerland, Cameroon, Portugal, and Uruguay. So there we go.
All right,
then. There you go.
There we go. All right.
And now, do you have anything else, or are we just going to finish the good, the bad, and the or the bad, the ugly, and the good? The bug.
Yes, the bad, the ugly, and the good.
All right, so I'll start with the bad. I changed my mind around a little bit how I wanted to do this when we talked earlier. I'm going with Qatar's readiness for this World Cup. It's going to be interesting. I like the fact it's in a place where the European team should be at a disadvantage in that they're not used to the heat that they're going to be getting, except for maybe Spain and Italy and a few others. England and Wales and Denmark are not ready for the heat they're going to have to deal with. But outside of that, like, this whole thing was a corrupt bargain to begin with. The hotel rooms are basically just tents in the middle of the desert. They're hiring like fans to pretend to be people from other countries. Like, there's all sorts of stuff. Like, Grant Wall tried taking a picture of the logo on the wall, and a security guard made him delete it. We're going to see, I think, some disasters over the next 2 weeks, which I'm 100% here for. But I'm expecting this to be bad coming in ahead of time. So
I read, and I give a flying fuck one way or the other, that in terms of the US logo, they're going with the rainbow thing.
Yes.
Thoughts?
I mean, that's something the players wanted to do. That's the players' decision, how they wanted to do it. They want to make a...
So that came from the players?
That came from the players, yeah.
Okay, cool.
They wanted to make a statement, up to them. We shall see. So, oh, by the way, RIP Twitter is currently trending on Twitter. That seems...
Again.
Yeah. So.
No, but that's interesting. I did not know that it was something that broke, that was from the players.
Yeah, it was from the
All right, well, cool.
It was from the players. So,
yeah, it's up to them. We'll see what happens. I mean, Qatar is,
we'll see. I'm not saying that any country is morally better than
we're not big in Qatar. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, it's just we shall see. I just do not think this country is ready for it, and it's going to be a massive.
You knew that 10 years ago,
right? It's going to be a massive culture shock. I mean, but their hotel rooms are literally like just bare tents in the middle of the desert. So we'll see exactly how this works.
Okay, my wife, who's in the hospital industry, has been, apparently they've been begging people to come there. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, 2,000 Nepalese workers went there to work and died while they were there. So we'll see how that goes. I would say definitely more workers have died making this than anything probably since, 1970. Or 1930, whatever, at the beginning when there were no rules.
Not a lie. It's true.
So, anyway, it's just going to be a disaster. We're going to see it's going to be a disaster coming up. The ugly, they got to figure out how to get the Washington football team out of the control of the owners of the Washington football team, out of the control of Snyder's.
That'll never happen.
The District of Columbia's Attorney General has filed 2 lawsuits against Commanders, saying that they cheated residents out of hundreds of thousands of dollars of unreturned security deposits. And the team's response was basically like, this is a political witch hunt by somebody who's leaving office, and that the crime in D.C. is so great that they should be able to do whatever they want. And they used their own player who'd been shot as cover for the fact they could do whatever they want and be a terrible company.
Hey, you went dark here, by the way.
Oh, I went dark.
Yeah.
Woo. don't know how that happened. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah. So the attorney general has filed a couple of lawsuits, and they're hiding behind their Brian Robinson, who got shot, as like, who cares about white collar crime? There's other crimes going on. Okay. They are allowed to investigate both at the same time. Like that team is just, they've ripped off basically everybody. I'm going to go back to calling the Washington football team because they're not going to be the Commanders 2 years from now. There'll be new ownership and they will rebrand the team. But yeah, the Washington football team is an absolute utter disaster, and the Snyders have to get out of there. They have to figure that out somehow. I don't know how, but they have to figure it out.
I think that'll happen. Soon.
I really we shall see. By the way, apologies to apologies on this ugly situation to the Patriots' former offensive coordinator. Well, I can't think of his name right now. The coach of the Raiders, Josh McDaniels, for after everybody made a big deal about how disrespectful it was that Colts hired Jeff Saturday, who had never coached above high school level, went and got his ass beaten by Jeff Saturday 6 days after he lost the previous week to a high school team, and they went out and beat the Raiders. So good luck, Josh McDaniels. Good job signing out with a team that's so cheap they're paying four previous coaches right now, so they can't afford to fire you. So you're going to be around next year, at least. So,
all right, somewhere, that's good.
Yeah, somewhere Rick Bisaccia is like, what the hell, dude? But, and I'm going to go with the good. A good with a caveat. So the good, I'm going to go with my Boston Bruins team. So the Boston Bruins won again tonight, 4-1 against Philadelphia.
Oh,
So they are currently, they have 30 points. Hold on, how many points do they have?
They must have only lost like three times at this point then?
Twice. They've lost twice.
Oh, shit. Okay.
They are 15-2 through their first 17 games.
They've only lost to Ontario. They've lost to nobody else. They lost 7-5 in Ottawa and 2-1 in Toronto. So, yes, Ottawa, who they've more than doubled up at this point. Ottawa has 13 points. Bruins have 30. But we lost our only game to Ottawa. So I'm just going to say this team is way more fun than it should be. This was supposed to be the last hurrah for Bergeron, who's going to have his 1,000th point some point this week. He had 997 in his career coming into tonight. I actually didn't see if he scored any points.
Eventual hockey Hall of Famer, but yes.
I mean, he has the most Selkies of all time. That makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Does Bergeron had no points tonight, so he's still 997. Getting to 1,000, though, eliminates any sort of question on it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But just the level of hockey that they're playing is just absolutely ridiculous. Hampus Lindholm has been a freaking revelation on defense. Most of us had never heard of him because nobody stays up to watch Ducks games on the East Coast.
Yeah, right.
But the vast majority of Bruins fans are like, we traded for this guy and gave him 8 years at $6.5 million. What are we doing? The answer is making a very smart investment. So I want to bring that up. I also want to bring up a negative thing because I was going to put them on the bad side here, but I'm going to put the reaction to what they did on the good side. Okay. So the Bruins signed during the last couple of weeks a player named Mitchell Miller.
This is your good?
I'll tell you why it's my good. Mitchell Miller is not my good. Mitchell Miller is a horrible human being. He is...
Maybe.
There's no maybe about it.
Okay. Go on.
He spent multiple years harassing a kid
mm-hmm.
for being African-American, put stuff in a urinal and made the kid eat it. Yeah. Like, and then went on about how he changed and everything without ever actually apologizing to anybody. Like, and the messages that he sent to the kid came out and...
I didn't see that, yeah. Go on.
Like, he was covering his ass more than anything. And the Bruins...
Agreed.
He was drafted in the first round, I believe, by the Coyotes a couple of those seasons ago.
Fourth.
Fourth round?
Yeah.
Fourth round a few years ago, and the Coyotes found out about it, and they cut him. He's been out there for a while, and the Bruins vetted him without actually talking to anybody he'd ever actually dealt with. They basically talked to the agent. The agent's like, yeah, he's doing all this great stuff, and none of it was true. None of this.
I agree with you.
He never actually did. Here's what's good about it. Every single player in that locker room went to management or like, we don't want this guy here. Bergeron went. Marchand went. McAvoy went. They're like, this guy does not fit our locker room. We don't know why he's here. They got ripped by fans. 100% fans were like, get him the hell out of here. Media was like, get him the hell out of here. And the Bruins, I guess to their credit, got him out of there. And now they're reviewing the way that they actually have Lauren Lynch coming in to review the way they use their vetting process so something like this doesn't happen again. What the Bruins did in terms of vetting is awful. They did a terrible job vetting. I don't care. You can say allegedly all you want. There's no evidence that contradicts anything that's being said other than his agent saying he's changed. There's only nothing. I have no. I don't want to bury somebody for their entire life. But if you want credit for changing or making progress, like let's talk about who was it? Was it Damon's? No, Tim Hardaway, right?
Yes. Okay. Go on. Yeah.
Tim Hardaway had some pretty tough views on some things. Mm-hmm. Realized he was wrong. And by all accounts, has gone out of his way to make amends and go through and actually get involved and change. This kid has not. It's entirely lip service. He wants to get in the NHL? Fine. I have no trouble with that. He has to take the steps, though, to get there.
Okay. So here's my thing with this kid. And I'm glad we brought him up. My take is usually when you're a dipshit when you're 14, you're a dipshit when you're 19.
All right.
Not always.
Not always, but agreed.
Yeah. So, but is there a path of redemption?
100% there's a path of redemption.
And, right. So.
But you have to take a step along that path and not say you took a step along that path.
Right. I agree with you. So, can he get a path?
Sure. The path was laid out for him.
Was it, though?
Yeah. I mean, if he actually did the things that his agent said he did, where he's been involved with charities and been doing these other things along those lines, if he'd actually done that, then we're having a whole separate conversation. He hadn't done any of it. He signed up for stuff and never appeared. I'm not saying this kid is beyond redemption, right? He's an asshole. His parents are also assholes, right? This agent.
But and I'm glad you said that, Evan, because if you're doing this at this stage in your life and seeing these shit, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's his parents. Not on the same scale. Do not put them on the same scale, but they remind me of Brock Turner's parents. Like, why should 15 minutes of fun ruin his life for the rest of the time, right? That's Brock Turner's father. Same sort of situation here. They're like, he's, you know, why would he did when he's 14 ruin? Because he hasn't made any steps to change, right? So the good, like I said, the Bruins are doing incredibly. The way that locker room this is probably a Patrice Bergeron statement more than anything else. Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah.
The way he and Zdeno Chara built that room and the way that team acts is nothing to do with ownership because the owners suck. And as soon as Bergeron retires, I hate to see what's going to happen. But just the way the whole team reacted to the management of the franchise screwing up badly is actually nice. And the greatest commissioner in sports right now came out and said He wasn't even sure this kid was eligible to play in the league at the moment, which is making a statement, which was interesting. Gary Bettman, if you want to talk about a path to redemption, Gary Bettman got in the Hall of Fame. Hall of Famer. Yes. We've talked about this multiple times.
Yeah.
If Gary Bettman could change, if I could change, you can change. We all can change. Come on, bring up Rocky IV whenever we can. But, like, this kid has a shot of redemption. He hasn't done any of it yet. He does not deserve a sweater. The Bruins are still owe him $272,000 for 3 days on the roster, or 3 days in the organization.
Really? Okay. I've known that.
Which should come directly out of Cam Neely and Don Sweeney's paychecks, in my opinion. Let him feel the pain on this. But we'll see. The Bruins are fantastic. The Celtics are fantastic. They won by 25 in Atlanta, who is the third seed right now in the East, yesterday. The Patriots play football, and the Red Sox.
I don't know how you said that. They play football.
They play football, and the Red Sox, they have a lot of people to sign. So. Yeah, we'll see about the Patriots. The Patriots beat the Jets this weekend. They make the playoffs. They don't beat the Jets this weekend, I don't think they'll make the playoffs. I think it literally comes down to this game based off the rest of their schedule. So,
yeah, well, try me a Saints fan this year.
Yeah, hey, could be worse. The Buffalo and the Browns got moved to Detroit. So,
oh, did that happen?
Yeah, because they're expecting somewhere up to 2 feet of snow originally. Now they're expecting 3 to 6 feet of snow over the weekend.
I'll say this.
And as well as
whoever was this massive brain guy? Is that
the word? The Einstein of the situation?
Yes. Realize that, hey, here's the lake over here. Let's live over here.
I mean, that's all Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Erie, Buffalo, Rochester. That whole area is the same.
Well, Toronto too.
Yeah, Toronto too.
Yeah.
Detroit, not to the same extent. Detroit, Chicago are not to the same extent as those other ones.
There we go.
So
with that.
Do we have anything we want to talk about?
I
think you wrote a book, didn't you?
Oh my God, yes, I did.
Yeah.
I did. Check it out. Chavo Guerrero Instant Classic. You can get that on Amazon. And there's so much other stuff that we do.
Well, the one thing I do want to bring up, and now that my voice is back, you should see quite a bit more of it. I had a whole plan, and then it just fell apart. But we are the president, in my part, and chairman on your side, of the United States Athletics Hall of Fame. We're going to be having our first class coming up in February. We're going to have a lot of content over the next few months getting added towards that. So you can vote on – I'll let you do it this time. Where do you vote?
www.nottinhalloffame.com/USA.
That's www.nottinhalloffame.com/USA. Vote as much as you want, as long as it's once a day. But
as long as it's once a day.
Yeah, your vote counts as much as the rest of ours. So no hanging chats.
But that's the part that I love about this the most.
Yeah, I mean, we have a commission to make sure we have the right people in front of you. But if I'm just a huge, I don't know, I'll just pick somebody random.
Go ahead.
I don't know, Dennis Connor guy. Like, I'm a huge sailing guy, for the heck of it. And I'm on the committee.
Sailing. Keeps me away.
My point though is, just because if I'm Jan Wenner in this situation, who I care about and who are my personal friends, is not going to help you. other than maybe getting in front of everybody, but my vote is still one out of how many? How do we have 12, 15 originally? And we compile them and put them in front of you guys. After that, it's up to you guys to vote, and each one of our votes counts just as much as yours. So,
you know, living in Winnipeg, there is no place I can sail.
There's Lake Winnipeg.
It's frozen.
Details.
And with that, wherever you are, wherever you may be, thank you all.
Take care, guys.
All right, take care.